鬼岛之音
Ghost Island Media。Welcome back to the Taiwan Take by Ghost Island Media. I'm your host, Emily Wai Wu. Saturday, February 24th, was the two-year anniversary of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Today, Russia's war on Ukraine continues. Ukraine's weapons are running low, and every day it's another rally for support from the international community. In the U.S., the $61 billion package of military assistance is stalling. In Canada, around 25% of its population think its government is providing too much aid to Ukraine. In Taiwan, aid to Ukraine comes in a different form. Ukraine has no representatives based in Taiwan, not an embassy, not a trade office. When the war broke out 2 years ago, there had been around 250 Ukrainians living in Taiwan. Most are still here today and have had to do the difficult job of citizen diplomacy. They have formed groups to rally support. They have held fundraiser events, cultural sharing days, demonstrations near the Russian trade office, two-year anniversary march, exhibitions, including one at the National Human Rights Museum in Taipei. They are the local media's first-hand source to the history and culture of Ukraine. They gather support from Taiwan's government as well as foreign governments stationed in Taiwan. They are the best example of citizen diplomacy, but at the worst of times. Today, we have with us Alex Kamenko, organizer of Taiwan Stands with Ukraine, Taiwan Ukraine Zhenxian. Other groups our audience might have heard of include Divchata Power, they focus on helping Ukrainian women and children, and Ukrainian Voices, the independent publication that shares information on social media from the Ukrainian perspective. I spoke to its co-founder, Oleg Shin, in an episode of Game Changers last year. Thank you, Alex, for coming in today. Alex, you organized a two-year anniversary march against Russia's war on Ukraine. How has the response from the Taiwanese public been?
We think it's been great. We organized the march because we had always have to do something. And for the bigger dates, we try to organize bigger events. We've had events around the start of the war. We've had anniversary rally last year. And sadly, there is a second anniversary. So we wanted to rally support here in Taipei. We wanted to give our own community a chance to come together and support each other because we're pretty spread out. And we wanted to give a chance for the Taiwanese to come and support us. And it went really well. We had a lot of people, Ukrainians and Taiwanese and others, and marched and supported our country.
I wanted to ask you, what is it like as a citizen to be conducting that citizen diplomacy? Normally, the interest of a group of citizens in a foreign country is represented by the government, foreign office. And without one here, it's your group and your colleagues, the 250 Ukrainians who have been conducting that work, getting support from the Taiwanese MOFA, Ministry of Foreign Affairs. This weekend's march, there was also a shout out by the European office in Taiwan, EETO, the European Economic and Trade Office, and the various other foreign offices, missions based here. In the absence of official diplomats, you become the diplomat. What has it been like working with them in the past 2 years?
It's been really fascinating. I joke sometimes that our Facebook page feels like the unofficial consulate because that's what people find when they look up Ukrainians in Taiwan. And people write to our Facebook page with inquiries, you know, looking for contacts, you know, Ukrainians, Taiwanese. And I'm the one who handles most of the messages as kind of a first line. It's just been really fascinating. But, you know, we didn't start out thinking that that's what we will end up doing, right? The day the war began, February 24th, 2022, the full-scale war began. I was the first person out by the Moscow office with my flag, tweeting that I'm there to support my country. I was sure that other people would come and find each other because we had to find a point to gather somewhere. And the Russia office here seemed like the natural place to gather. And that's what indeed what happened. First day, there were maybe about five people who came out there. It was a Thursday. On Friday, there were probably 20 something. On Saturday, there was more than 100. I actually didn't know any other Ukrainians in Taiwan at that point. I've only been in Taiwan for about 6 months and just been focused on settling in and, you know, getting kids into school. The Taiwanese volunteers and activists were actually the genesis of Taiwan Stands With Ukraine. And they started the Facebook page and came up with that name. And then as we started meeting each other and started getting involved, it sort of slowly grew and morphed. What happened over those 2 years is that as we started doing more and more, which was always an initiative of a person, some person, you know, would come and say, let's do a cultural event. Another person would say, you know, we got to do a rally, right? Or we'll do some other action. And then other people would say, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's work together. And through those actions, through those conversations, that's how everything evolved. And that's how we got the visibility and the experience and the reputation of being able to do these things. And eventually, it took a while, but eventually the Minister of Foreign Affairs now knows what our very informal organization is. You know, we're not a registered entity. We're just a collection of volunteers. But the European office has been supportive, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, we've done lots of interviews, we've done all this work, I think, simply because we just continued doing it and persisted. And I still go out there twice a week to stand around the Moscow office with the flag. And usually there are a few other people who join me. And that's what allowed that citizen diplomacy to grow. But it was not like it happened overnight. So it was a very interesting process.
Because of your work and other Ukrainians in Taiwan and the Taiwanese activists, you have been able to collect a lot of donation from the Taiwanese public. Can you tell us about those? I think there was power generators, ambulances.
That's one of our, I would say we focus on several things. We focus on collecting donations if we can, and everything goes directly to Ukraine in some form. And we focus on making donations that make an immediate difference. And we also want people in Ukraine to know that those donations are coming from Taiwan, because it's important for us as Ukrainians in Taiwan to promote Taiwan in Ukraine. And also, you know, for example, the work of Ukrainian Voices and the work of all those other activists who maybe are not directly part of Taiwan Stands With Ukraine actions, they're all helping with that. And it's very important to us because we know that Taiwan's government has supported Ukraine from day one of the full-scale war. And that was unprompted, it was genuine, and it is continuing. But in Ukraine, there hasn't been that much knowledge and recognition of Taiwan's support. So we see it as our mission here to grow that and to promote that. And we, of course, want Ukraine to establish a relationship with Taiwan in the near future, because all of the closest allies of Ukraine in Europe, Lithuania, Czechia, Poland, right, are very, very consistent partners of Taiwan. And we've done a little bit of everything, like you said, you know, generators, humanitarian aid. We recently bought our fifth ambulance that just a couple of days ago arrived to the Kharkiv region, which happens to be my hometown. We've done military help. We've sent drones to the fighters. We've sent tourniquets to the front lines. We've helped with winter gear and other things like that. Recently, we helped a children's home in the Lviv area that has a lot of orphans to get supplies for that would last them quite a bit, just basic needs for the children. Yeah, we've managed to raise more than 4 million NT, all mostly coming through very small scale donations, people giving on the street, people coming to our food events, buying food, coming to our events where we sell souvenirs. It all adds up. Every little bit helps. The European office in particular, I want to give them a shout out. They organize a European festival every year. And last year they invited us to participate and gave us a booth and helped us promote. And that's what actually ended up buying a couple of ambulances, because the support from the public at that festival has been almost overwhelming. And we're really looking forward to doing it again this year in May.
Can you tell our audience a bit more about the Ukrainian community in Taipei and in Taiwan? I'm sorry.
Yeah. To start with, it's quite small. You mentioned there were, 200 something, 250 in the beginning. And not that many more. There are, by the MOFA count, there are 263 right now. I think there are some people who maybe are not counted in that because they have, like me, for example, I have an American citizenship now because I lived in the US for a long time. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of students who come here for maybe a year or 6 months. I'm not sure if they're counted, but it's small and it's spread out. There are Ukrainians everywhere. Kaohsiung, Hualien, Taichung, Hsinchu, here in Taipei. So we don't actually get to see each other in person that often. So that's another great thing about these events, is that we're able to come together and not only volunteer, but also see each other, support each other, sing together, march together. So it's very diverse, very spread out. There are people who have come to Taiwan to study years ago and settled down here and are working, maybe even married to the Taiwanese. There are people who have come more recently for work. There are performers that come here to work in the theme parks and, acrobats, dancers, circus performers, teachers. So it's really diverse. Researchers that work at universities. So we have a little bit of everything. And not everybody is maybe, really active, right? People have lives, some people have more chance than others to participate. But I was really happy on Saturday. I saw a bunch of new faces at our march that came out. So that was really nice to see. And they help, they donate, they promote. So we hope to grow it. We're far away from home. So we wish we had 10 times as many Ukrainians here.
Have you been in contact with the Ukrainian government? Maybe it's at home or the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Yeah. So the history of sort of Taiwan's relationship with Ukraine, right, has to take into account the fact that Ukraine for many years has been a very active trade partner with China, right, and has a Chinese embassy there. And especially under the previous governments, there were more pro-Russia oriented, right? They have more actively cultivated those ties with China. And so they have never established a relationship with Taiwan. Certainly the war, the full-scale war, has shown who our friends are. And China's support of Russia, with China's talk but inability to deliver really any meaningful help in terms of resolving this conflict or helping Ukraine in any meaningful way, I think the Ukrainian government realizes that in the long term, aligning themselves with China is not going to be beneficial to Ukraine. However, I think, and that's just my personal opinion that I know some people share here, we don't think that during the active war, it's just easy for the Ukrainian government to start establishing new relationships that are so, could be controversial, like Taiwan. However, we're pretty sure that internally they realize that China is not going to give them anything. We've had contacts with the Ukrainian legislators and NGOs that I think are much more open and free to speak their minds about where they see the support coming from. And it was 2022, I think, at the end of the year, there was a delegation. There was one Ukrainian lawmaker, and there were a number of NGO heads and representatives that came here. And those contacts are continuing. So we know that there is a Taiwan friendship group, I think, in the Ukrainian parliament. There was one in the last legislative yuan as well here. Now that there's a new session, I don't know if it's been formed yet, but I hope it will. So those contacts are continuing. And we now have a contact in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs here. And we know, of course, they're very interested in helping and supporting. So we believe that the Ukrainian government will come around and will invest into developing relationship with Taiwan. But I think it would just take some time. It's just really hard right now. They are focused on the immediate needs of the war and their population.
In addition to the 4 million new Taiwan dollars of aid that you and the community here have collected from the Taiwanese public, some of the donations coming from the Taiwanese government has included in 2022, 27 tons of medical supplies as humanitarian aid. And in May 2023, $5 million from the Taiwanese government for the rebuilding of schools in Ukraine.
You mentioned a couple of things that happened here in Taiwan. There has been a lot more. It's just not been publicized. And there are other things I'm aware of. One I'll call out was the donation of ambulances and fire trucks that went last year. The second shipment went, I think, also last year, and I believe a third is being prepared. That was a huge project. Was spearheaded by a Taiwanese businessman, Mr. Bai from Changhua County, who really originally wanted to buy a couple of ambulances and send them. And then it snowballed into a very large donation of surplus ambulances and fire trucks and other equipment by various local governments in Taiwan that were going to essentially renew their fleets. And then it all got sent to a place in Changhua where private donations and private help enabled refurbishing and preparing them for shipment and actually shipping them through Poland all the way to Ukraine. And that happened several times. So that, you know, we were there to support it, but that was all driven by the Taiwanese who want to donate. So a lot of government help, a lot of private help as well, a lot of private donations. And if you convert that into dollars, it's an enormous amount. There was donation of medical beds from Tainan that was spearheaded in part by a Ukrainian woman in Tainan, Olga, in Kaohsiung, Olga, and the Presbyterian Church in Taiwan that has been very active in trying to find ways to help. So they found a manufacturer that was able to produce these very high quality medical beds and donate them to hospitals across Ukraine. And there has been, the Taiwanese government has actually devoted quite a bit of money to help, and they are working, they were trying to find ways to help by donating directly to local governments in Ukraine, working with European partners, Lithuanians and Polish. So it's all behind the scenes, all very difficult because of the lack of the formal relationship, but it's been happening, it will continue to happen. So we're very grateful for that as Ukrainians here in Taiwan.
You spoke about the need of maintaining things at home. In a time like this, what do you expect from your leaders, Ukrainian leaders?
I mean, they have a difficult task, right, of balancing the, on one side, the almost 1,000-kilometer front, right, of where there is active fighting. And right now there is a, you know, attempted advances by Russian troops to capture and recapture some of the territory. And on the other side, Ukraine is the largest country in Europe, and a large part of it is still, you know, unoccupied. And people are trying to live a semblance of normal life with continued attacks, indiscriminate shelling and rocket strikes, bombing of the civilian infrastructure, you know, which are all acts of pure terror. Most of them have zero military objective. And so internally, the government has a difficult task of trying to balance the needs of the civilian population with the wartime needs. So it's just, it's really difficult. I hope they can continue to balance it. They've done very well to advocate for continued support from the world, and that support has been there.
Elections in Ukraine have been suspended since the war. How does the public see that? What is the view on that?
Yeah, it's harder for me to judge because my family is not in Ukraine. I only have classmates and friends there. So I don't have sort of a good grasp on the internal politics, honestly, myself right now, and simply no time to develop it. But I have not heard any, you know, there are always complaints about whatever party is in power, right? And of course, there are frictions within the Ukrainian society about the role of the different parties in parliament and the governing party that has been in power throughout the war. But I haven't seen anybody, you know, say that somehow that's a big problem, because it's simply impossible to hold normal elections in wartime, right? Normal, fair, safe elections in wartime. So I haven't seen any outright calls for changing that. Of course, domestic politics does have to evolve, and I don't know what the future holds there. But I just hope that the Ukrainian society stays united around the fact that we have to keep fighting. They have to put all the parties, all the different interests, hopefully can put aside their differences in the name of defending the country, because if that doesn't happen, there's no other country we have. So I hope that will all be worked out internally in one way or another. The war will end and we can have another election soon.
President Volodymyr Zelensky, the short biography to him has been former actor and entertainer. Aside from his former job, he actually had a training in law. Who is he? How would you describe this man?
I think for me, it's very simple and very different from my classmates who have participated in elections and see the internal side of it, the internal politics. For me, as a longtime expat, it's really simple. He is the symbol of resistance of Ukrainian people. And he, from the early days of the war, by bravely putting himself out there and presenting the image to Ukrainians and to the world of resistance, courage, calm, and determination to fight, I think he really brought together a lot of the early support, both internally and from the outside world. And so I still see him as that. You know, you could see his face 2 years ago and now. You can see what war does to a person. I have no idea how much longer he'll be able to sustain doing that and playing that role. I would wish that on nobody. But to me, he is the symbol of resistance and courage of Ukrainian people. And the fact that from day one, they fought and they never considered not doing that.
There hasn't been a definite number on the casualty of war on the Ukrainian side. A previous estimate by U.S. officials had 70,000 soldiers, with many more wounded. Russian estimates 60,000 passed away on the Ukrainian side. This past weekend, President Zelensky said at a news conference in Kiev that Ukraine estimates 30,000. And he said that he wanted to say this number because it counters Russian propaganda or other estimates. What do you think he meant by that, that it counters propaganda?
I think it's been extensively documented that a large percentage of what comes out of Russian sources is an outright lie, right? And it starts with the president of Russia, who will confidently, with a smirk, say things on TV that are known to be absolutely untrue. And it extends down to the entire apparatus of the government, because that's what they've been doing for many, many years now. They lie. And they're not ashamed of it, right? To them, it's just a tool. They have absolutely no conscience about it. So if you take that into consideration, it is very likely that whatever they say about the casualties, and I haven't heard the 60,000 figure myself, I would have assumed they would put a higher number out there because they lie. But I think that's really the source of that statement, is that we want to keep reminding everybody, especially in the Western media, who goes out there and takes quotes from Russian officials and puts them without any caveats into their reports.
Why would it be in Russia's interest to give an overestimate of casualties? And I understand this is a very difficult question. So,
I mean, I think it's the same reason why they say that the plane wasn't shot down last weekend and the crew survived and it was shot down by their own air defense. And then now the obituaries are starting to come and it's been proven that air reconnaissance plane has been shut down, right? Because they want to present the image to the world and to their own people that the war is going better than it is. Because it's sort of amazing how much needless death and destruction the Russian society has been able to take and send hundreds of thousands of its own citizens to die for nothing. But there's probably a limit somewhere, and they're always trying to dress it up and make it sound like they are winning more than they are. And so inflating the number of Ukrainian casualties comes from the same desire. Ukraine estimates that Russia has lost more than 400,000 people in Ukraine. Now, do I think that's maybe an overestimate? Sure. But it's been proven that the casualty counts by Russians are much, much higher because they simply herd people to the slaughter. And if that allows them to take 1 kilometer by laying down 10,000 people, they're willing to do it. And those people are willing to die. Not sure why. So, you know, the numbers are quite different. And so that's why the Russia tries to inflate the Ukrainian casualty count to make them look more similar.
I think in the past 2 years, you, along with others who have been coming on shows and taking interviews and answering questions on anything as large as that to what is the food of Ukraine, anything big and small. And I can only imagine this is a very, very difficult role for you all. And I thank you. I hope that victory comes very soon. I hope that the third year does not extend to a fourth, and that soon enough all of the Ukrainians will be reunited with your friends and family once again. But also that foreign aids keep coming, that this package that's waiting over at the U.S. Congress goes through. What can each of us do in our different communities?
We always say to people who want to, you know, donate, you know, 10 NT or 50 NT and apologize that it's too little, maybe, you know, it happens. And we say, it's okay. Every little bit helps. The biggest difference is between doing nothing and doing something, right? Because doing nothing is easiest. If you do something, even once, you've crossed that line, and then we believe that you will think about doing something again. And it's, some people do a lot, some people do a little bit, right? Everybody's different. Everybody has different means and different skills. But the first thing we would encourage people is to do something. And that can be as small as maybe posting a story on their social media, right, that touched you. A story that will remind your friends that maybe somehow forgot that there is a war going on, right? Maybe they'll be curious and maybe they'll read about it. If you can, donate money, right? If you can, support the Ukrainian community here in Taiwan through different actions that we do. But, you know, the baseline is just to be informed, try to know, try to empathize, try to care and try to share it. And from that empathy and from knowing what's happening, hopefully other things can come. So, you know, Taiwanese can donate directly to the Ukrainian government and various organizations in Ukraine. We're not able to do that many events. You know, our human power is quite small, but we're always doing something. For example, we'll have another food day on March 10th in a place in Gongguan that's owned by a supporter of ours. And then there'll be European Festival in May, and there will be other things we'll do. So there's always something. So yeah, I would just say, please do something. Please don't be indifferent to the fate of an entire nation that's at risk of being erased from existence, because Russia has long ago dropped any pretense that the war is about anything but that. If you listen to what they say now, very openly, they talk about genociding Ukrainians and sending them to Siberia for re-education. You know, they're not even pretending anymore. So just try to be informed and do something.
Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
March 10th is the food day in Taipei. In May, there is the European Festival. Before we go, I think our listeners could follow all of your events on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, under the account Taiwan Stands with Ukraine. Thank you so much, Alex, for joining us today. And I wish you and everybody all the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me and giving us a chance to tell our stories.
Thank you. This has been a Ghost Island Media production based in Taipei, Taiwan. I'm Emily Waiwu. I'll see you next time.